Hey, I'm Tony Perkins. If you're a small business owner, your life is busy. You can't be figuring out every little thing, how to bring in the next client, how to figure out payroll. You don't have the time or the money to have your own secretary to take the calls, but answering all of the calls yourself makes it hard to look professional. Here's something that's going to help you. It's called eVoice. Whether you're a business of one or 100, eVoice will help you manage all of your incoming calls. With a toll-free number, dial-by-name directory, and call routing tools, your business is going to sound like a bustling Fortune 500 company. Even if you can't take a call, eVoice will transcribe the voicemail and email it to you. And with eVoice, you can even try it before you buy it. Right now, just for our listeners, you can get a 60-day trial of eVoice absolutely free. Go to our website, click on the eVoice banner on the top of the page, and insert the code TPGS. Take charge of your business. Go to our website and click on the banner. Insert the code TPGS at checkout for your 60-day free trial. eVoice, a better way to connect.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. It's the Tony Perkins Show, featuring Gary Stein. A more broadcasting presentation. No, they're not related. They're just good friends. It's Tony and Gary.
Happy birthday to you, America!
I thought he was singing it to me because my birthday was a few weeks ago.
No, we covered that already.
Oh, it's, that's over?
It is the nation's birthday.
Oh, that's right, them.
Them. Aren't you part of
us? But I'm part of the world, you know.
Aren't we all part of the
yes,
world?
Yes, we are. Look, can we hold hands?
it does feel like kind of a kumbaya moment. Happy birthday. It is the 4th of July, 2015, America's birthday, America's Independence Day, and we're very excited to be here with you on that day.
We are.
On this day.
Every day.
Yes.
We're excited to be there with them every single day of the week.
Hi there, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Tony Perkins.
I'm Gary Stein.
We are joined, as always, by the lovely, the talented Rob Ford. Hello, Rob.
I just wanted to tell Gary that I actually know Stevie Wonder personally. If he missed your birthday the first time around, you just weren't going to get any mention at all.
Wow. You know, and I thought he and I were just like that.
I guess not.
Can't see that on radio.
I do know Stevie Wonder. I've met Stevie Wonder.
Have you?
Now, we weren't together, though, when we met him.
No.
I think my first...
It's like one of the few things I didn't produce for you at GMA.
That's right.
Right?
My first piece that I did at GMA with a musical icon with Stevie Wonder. Mm-hmm. It was before you were at GMA, and I had to go down to North Carolina to interview him. He was doing something for the Special Olympics.
Right.
Rhonda went with me, and it was very funny because during the course of the spending time with him, he kind of, I won't say he hit on Rhonda, but he was flirting with her.
Really?
He's very flirtatious.
I always say that you're a billionaire, because you are.
Which I'm not.
Which you are. But he probably has more money than you, I thought.
Yes.
I think you should have see if that fermented a little bit.
Maybe,
you should have done something with that.
Well, that's probably because she has a great voice.
Well, that would be right, yes. Yeah, obviously. Although, you know, and I talked to Stevie about this, there are a lot of people who believe Stevie Wonder can see, which he copped to. In fact, I said to, you know, because sometimes he drives.
Yeah.
Not like out on the Beltway, but I mean, he's kind of crazy. And he's all his other senses are so developed that when you're talking to him, you really feel like he can see. And he hears that all the time.
It's very possible there was actually nothing wrong with Helen Keller.
Well, I wouldn't jump to
that. She was perfectly fine.
I wouldn't jump to that.
Just for the sake of making a movie, they decided, let's give her an affliction, you know?
That's right. They Hollywooded her up.
They Hollywoodized
it. It adds conflict.
Yeah, that's right. That's
and Bancroft was looking for a film.
That's right.
And they said, no.
Somehow we've gotten very far astray.
We always do. Day. That's our job.
I want to see if you know the, if you can do the math very quickly.
If you even mention the word math, you know. I can't do it.
What number birthday is this for America?
I only know mine.
Fireworks. Look, we got fireworks.
So you think I can count from like from 2015
yes.
and subtract 1776.
Yes.
I can't do that.
Can't do it. Rob, no. Can you do it real quick?
1776, 239?
239.
I think it's
very
20
good.
Years.
Very good.
20 years. I'm pretty sure it's 20. 21, maybe.
Yeah.
239, and you know, I remember so clearly, Rob wasn't born, but I remember so clearly what a big deal the bicentennial was.
Oh, me
was.
Too.
200 years.
I watched the tall ships from
yeah.
Fort Lee, New Jersey,
yeah.
up on a balcony in somebody's place I broke into.
Oh, yeah. You could. Well, happy 4th of July. Broke into somebody's.
Exactly.
You could see. I watched them on TV. Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
Wow.
I remember Walter Cronkite was broadcasting. And
we did not know each other
yet. We didn't
yet,
know each other.
I do remember the Bicentennial Quarter that came out with like the drummer boy on the back of it.
Yes.
It's yeah. actually become a big collector's item.
That's right. And they tied it into Christmas. Little drummer boy.
That's right. Yep.
Can I go back to Stevie for a second because you think you're the only one who met him? So here's
the. See, he couldn't let that go.
No.
Now he's got to tell a Stevie story.
Can't let anything go.
All right.
So. All I'll say is that I had a very close relationship with Stevie. We were friends for many, many years.
That's
and,
not true.
And the last thing he said to me right after, like, we had, like, some shrimp Louie, I think. And right after the shrimp Louie, and I was leaving the restaurant before him because he was waiting for his guys to walk him out, he said to me, thank you.
Uh-huh.
And I knew what he meant.
Uh-huh.
When he presented this album, there was an album called Songs Off Key. And I said to him, I think we should change that. How about Songs in the Key? And he said, of life. And I said,
wow.
Great. You don't have to pay me a thing for that.
That's incredible. That I did not
That's my Stevie story.
I did not know you actually named that album. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I accidentally left my phone on during all of this.
Yeah.
So Shazam is trying to identify Happy Birthday by Stevie Wonder. That's very funny. Let me turn it off. All right. Sorry about that.
That's weird. Okay. It says it's actually by Gary Stein. That's really
songs
weird.
Songs in the Key of Life, Gary Stein.
That's right.
Happy birthday, America.
Thank you.
Not you.
Oh, okay.
We've got a great episode. We're going to talk a little bit more about
How do you know it's great?
Well, I don't know yet.
You really don't.
We hope
you
that
put so much pressure on us.
I know.
You know?
I know. But
oh, here's another great episode. What if it sucks?
That's the only way we'll deliver.
Okay.
We're going to talk a little bit more about Independence Day. And, you know. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's dance to this a little bit.
This is a great find. You know, you are so quick, but luckily, our audience doesn't have to see Tony dancing.
I like this song. I love this song. I like Katy Perry. I'm a Katy Perry fan.
Oh, me too. Yeah. I love Katy, and I love...
yeah, but you couldn't pick her out of a lineup.
No, I couldn't. I couldn't. As you know, I only listen to dead people my wife.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. I like that.
Absolutely.
In honor of independence... Well, first of all...
yes, go ahead.
Because I can't finish a thought with you here.
No.
We're going to talk more Independence Day a little bit later in the show. We also have a guest joining us today. Very good friend of mine, and we've got him here for a reason today. There's been some big Beatles news during the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
The Beatles!
Oh, yeah.
Yes, of course. Very good friend of mine, Russ Leese, who is... When I say he is a Beatles collector, I am talking... Not like me, and you've seen my Beatles room, which I'm very proud of,
yeah.
And I've got my Flip Your Wig game, and I've got my Butcher album
You've
cover,
got your lunch boxes.
My lunch boxes and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Russ Leese.
A Zippo lighter.
I do have a Zippo lighter that you gave me. Thank you very much.
mouse pads.
I do have some mouse pads. Yeah. How do you know that?
No reason.
Okay. You've been casing the joint or something?
Like I said, no reason.
We are keeping you so off track, aren't
yes,
we?
But so that's the kind of stuff I have, which is great stuff.
Yes.
Here's the kind of stuff Russ owns.
Yeah.
The Beatles drum head that they used on the first Ed Sullivan show.
Oh, everyone has that.
Paul McCartney's jacket that he wore at Shea Stadium.
Oh, my God.
Ringo's coat that he's wearing on the cover of Abbey Road.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
Does Russ buy all that or does he steal it?
No, he has bought the
really?
Stuff. But I think he's going to let us tell that he is parting company with it.
Really?
After all these years. Can't believe it. He's going to be here and he's going to inform us about this big Beatles news that just broke a couple of weeks ago.
Very good.
We're right on top of it.
Okay. It just broke a few weeks ago. Aren't you the news anchor at Fox 5?
I know. Yeah. we'll still use the breaking news.
Exactly. Tony just reported on Sandy, which was a huge hurricane.
One night on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, one of my favorite bits, you know, when he would have civilians on, as they would call it, not celebrities.
Right.
They had a woman on. You might remember this. She was a wood chopping expert.
Uh-huh.
She had won a wood chopping competition, I think like in 1949 or something like that. So Carson's introducing her and says, blah, 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 whatever her name is. She won the national wood chopping competition in 1949. And our crack staff has just gotten to this. She's here with us tonight. It's very, very funny. Anyway, Russ will be here in a little bit, and I think he's brought some memorabilia with him, so that'll be very cool.
If he didn't, do we have to interview him?
No, actually.
Okay.
I should have made that a prerequisite.
Exactly.
Bring something with you, or else.
I need swag.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to him.
For Independence Day, though, I thought, you know, it's a special day, we want to do something special and inspiring.
Yeah. And so we found something cheesy.
We found but you got to admit, this is one of the...
It's one of the great cheesiest speeches ever given.
Yes.
And thank God we're going to play it.
This is by, I don't know what his actual name was in the movie. I don't remember. So I'm just going to refer to him as President Bill Pullman.
Yeah. In one of his worst acting jobs.
I would actually agree.
Oh, yeah.
Like him.
Yeah, hands down.
He wasn't, I wouldn't have cast him as a president of the United
States.
He's
so non-presidential.
Non-presidential.
You know?
Doesn't carry himself like a president. Anyway, he was the president of America in...
He could have been the butler, you know, but not the president.
In the movie Independence Day.
Yes.
And delivers this fiery speech to inspire the troops as the world is facing annihilation from aliens. So can we please, for the benefit of our country, President Bill. That's all the other presidents.
Yeah,
President
exactly.
Bill Pullman.
In less than an hour, aircraft from here will join others from around the world. And you will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind. Mankind, that word should have new meaning for all of us today. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interest. Perhaps it's fate that today is the 4th of July, and you will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live. To exist. And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
Yeah. Woo! Yeah. President Pullman. Oh, man.
Yeah.
You know, he obviously made a character choice about, like, try to do something with his voice to make it be different. Why does he sound like his private areas are being squeezed? Like, today, I am in a lot of pain. Something is happening down below I can't explain.
That's President Thomas J. Whitmore.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, very good, Rob.
Yeah, that doesn't explain the crotch thing.
Well, no, if they reboot it, you could actually audition for it, do that voice, and I think you would get the part.
There you go.
That's right.
Well, you know, speaking of rebooting it, the movie is, I think it's 21 years old now.
Amazing.
Didn't it come out in 94?
Well, at the rate of Hollywood, it's well due for a reboot.
Oh, absolutely. They reboot Spider-Man every 7 months, it seems.
It's
ridiculous. But this movie, I saw it recently, not too long ago. It doesn't hold up as well as you would think it was. In 20 years, special effects have evolved.
Independence Day? It didn't hold up a week later.
Yeah, you don't like this movie.
No, I do. I like it, but I like it for what it is. It's a really stupid adventure film, and you have to suspend everything to be able to accept it. And I do, you know. I also think that Jeff Goldblum was, you know what? He's always miscast because he should never have a role.
No, I like Jeff Goldblum.
How about that strut at the end with Will Smith when they've won and Jeff Goldblum is trying to look cool because he's lifted weights for, you know, The Fly? And I think... You're still a nerd. You were a nerd in Silverado.
Yeah.
You're a nerd.
Well, because he's trying to be cool.
Well,
at
but
that
that's
point
but
the
that's
movie.
The point. When you're acting, you're not supposed to be trying. Yeah, he's trying really hard.
No, I think his character is trying to be cool because he really is a nerd in the movie. And here's the thing that's
he doesn't
crazy
deserve
about
an acting
movie.
Career.
Oh, I disagree. I like him. I love that he's doing commercials now for some apartment apartments.com or
right.
something.
And he
like
looks
that.
Like he's 105.
He does.
Yeah.
But I even like him in those commercials.
You know, you were so nice and I'm not. What's the story with you?
Here's a ridiculous thing about
go
that
with
movie.
Me a little bit.
Do you remember how they defeat the aliens? They upload a computer virus.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm thinking, really? Our computers, you can just upload a virus to their computer and that's going to knock it out of the sky?
Well, what about, like, you think you're about to die, but there's always time for a cigar.
Well, yeah, that was
you know?
A little crazy, too.
Come on.
The movie, to me, has become, back then, I thought, wow, this is incredible. And that was one of the first movies where all of a sudden we started seeing the destruction of our icons, the White House and all that.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Every summer, the world is being destroyed for some reason. I don't know. You could do a whole psychological thing about this. We must enjoy seeing that because I just saw San Andreas a couple of weeks ago. Really, to see all the buildings crumble and everything.
Well, I think it's just because we're terrified.
Maybe.
I think we're making all of these movies to try to feel better about the fact that we don't know what
don't
can
know.
Happen.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But to me, Independence Day, back then it was cool and exciting. To me, it looks like a campy movie now.
We're talking about it more right now than any critic did when it came out.
Well, you know, listen, that speech that we just played, you don't like that speech.
No, I like it.
Yeah,
I like
cheesy.
It.
It's cheesy. It's cheesy.
Yeah.
It's very cheesy with the music. And, but, you know, you got to do that.
I like it, but I think that somebody else could have delivered it better, and maybe they would have hidden the cheese a little more.
Kevin McCarthy, who we had on our show, the movie reviewer from Fox 5, he loves that speech. It's one of his favorite moments in film.
I bet he does. I have no doubt about that.
Independence Day, 60% on Rotten Tomatoes, certified fresh.
Really? That's enough to be certified fresh?
With the audience, it's 75%.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, you don't like that president.
Prove at all? I don't know.
You don't like President Pullman or President Whitmore in Independence Day.
Right.
I've got a worse president for you.
You do?
I don't remember what year this movie came out. It came out years later. Maybe Rob can look it up. Deep Impact.
I believe it was 98.
98. Okay, thank you. Morgan Freeman is the president. Here's the first thing I want to say. I remember hearing someone else say this. I thought it when I saw the movie, and then I read someone else saying, I thought, that's exactly what I thought. Go rent the movie, Deep Impact. Taya Leone is in it.
You're telling everybody to rent a movie that you think is bad.
Well, because I want you to notice one thing.
Okay.
Morgan Freeman.
You should pay for it. If they're going to rent it and it sucks, you should pay for it.
Morgan Freeman as the president, he is the worst dressed president I've ever seen in a movie. It's like they didn't spend money on a wardrobe that looks presidential.
And why a purple suit, you know? I mean, just
he was not. And the hat, that was too much.
Yeah, the fur and all that.
I thought the cane was a nice touch.
And there was so much chrome on Air Force One.
All right.
You know,
and the fact that his name was President Pimp-a-Lot. I thought that was over the top.
It was.
And he wore the first alligator shoes.
He did.
Look up his name. I don't know what his presidential name was. But I love this because when I see that movie, and it's not a very good movie, a lot of bad acting in that one as well. This is the one where, remember? I think Armageddon came out around the same time, maybe the same year. And there was this uproar of, well, wait a minute. How many movies are going to come out where an asteroid is about to hit the Earth? And destroy the Earth. In Deep Impact, it's a comet that's about to hit the Earth.
Right, not aliens.
Right,
it's just,
Yeah.
President Beck is his name.
President Beck?
Beck, like the band?
No, not even a first name for him, just President
it's
Beck.
President Beck.
All right, that bad presidential name.
Yeah.
They put no thought. But here's the thing.
Well, they knew it was going to be a flop.
Right. Bill Pullman, that was an inspiring speech.
Yeah.
Here's the speech.
I still feel inspired.
Well, but wait till you listen to this. I've always found this to be very funny. So they send up a missile to blow the comet up, so because the comet's aimed right for Earth.
Right.
They do that. It doesn't go well. So this is the address that the president now has to make to the American people. Here's President Morgan Freeman.
Hello, America.
Hello, America.
It is my unhappy duty to report to you.
It's better than yo, America.
This computer.
I'm sorry. You
got to
start again. I talked over.
I was about to say, give the president some respect.
No. I have never heard a president ever say. You know what? The writers of this didn't even do their research. No president begins a speech, "Hello, America."
Yeah.
All right, but then we got to hear what
our listeners are going to send us about 10 clips of president saying, hello, America,
yeah, probably
now.
Right.
Yeah, how you doing, America? Here's the situation.
America, check this out.
Here's the situation.
All right,
right.
Right
now, we got a story going on right now where I tried something that didn't work. All right? I did the best I could, you know, but I didn't have my homies helping me do nothing. Right? If I got my gang together, we could have done some but I didn't have no I didn't have nothing. I just had a f***ing asteroid, and I ain't never dealt with no asteroids in my neighborhood.
Oh, like it's the 4th of July,
I can't, you know, I didn't do, you the can't mouth, blame me.
Put mouth on you.
I ain't do no
All right, here is President Morgan Freeman.
Hello, America. It is my unhappy duty to report to you that the Messiah has failed. This computer-enhanced radar image from Houston shows how the detonation succeeded, however, did not destroy the comet. There are now two pieces, one 6 miles wide, the other a mile and a half. Both are still on the path towards Earth.
Thanks a lot.
You know, it'd be great if someone yelled out, that's what we get for electing a black president.
That's right. That's why it's never going to happen.
Now we have to make some decisions.
Imagine having to make this speech.
Oh, really?
And in the movie, as he referenced, he's got a diagram. Here's how we're now going to be annihilated.
Yeah, right.
This is like the worst government event ever.
The only thing he did right, though, is he named the mission Messiah, which should not fail.
Right.
If the Messiah failed.
Right, that's the other. Imagine you just happen to turn on the TV. I have to announce the Messiah has failed. You're like, what? Whoa, wait a minute. What's going on?
Well, his Jewish advisor suggested it would be a good idea. Because then maybe the Messiah would finally come.
Think about the White House television producer who's saying, all right, camera one on the president. Are we going to switch over to the diagram of the asteroid or the comet being exploded and two pieces come barreling towards us? All right, make the switch. Now, change.
That's right. It's awful. And I love, he's like politicians. He does still try to spin it a little bit when he says, the detonation succeeded. We blew it up.
Yeah.
However, there are now two pieces headed to Earth.
We got good news and bad news. The detonation worked, but now we got two asteroids to deal with.
They should have cut to crowds in the street. You know how they're always watching TVs in department store windows and stuff, or up at Times Square. They should have cut to crowds just giving the finger to the TV. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. I could have done better than that.
That's good stuff. Anyway, happy birthday to you, United States of America. We're gonna talk a little bit more about Independence Day, the real Independence Day, in a little bit as we find out just what Americans know about the 4th of July.
Can't wait for that.
It's pretty sad. Yeah. Want to remind you to like us on Facebook. Just go to the Tony Perkins Show. We love the fact that our membership is growing. Tell your friends about it. And check us out there. Also, tell your friends about Twitter. On Twitter, you can find us at T-Perk Show. Follow us there. We do appreciate it.
And also, if you're listening to the show, one great way you can share it with your friends is when you're listening to the show, whenever you do listen to it, put up a link on your Facebook or your Twitter or whatever it is. Ooh, say, yeah. Hey, I'm checking out the Tony Perkins Show. This is the episode I'm listening to. You guys should listen too.
Excellent idea.
And we've got a bunch of listeners. If they all do that at the same time, I think it would really help the show out.
Yep.
It would. There's another social media way to be able to get the word out, and that is whatever anybody is talking about.
Yes.
Steer the conversation to the Tony Perkins Show.
I like
show.
That. Whenever just, you're with
it
friends,
doesn't matter what. If people are just talking about, hey, I bought a great rutabaga today.
Right, that's
just
right.
Just go, really? And that's one of Tony Perkins' favorite vegetables.
Even your food references are obscure.
Everything is obscure.
Rutabaga, that's what you go to.
I've never even had one.
Not an onion, not a potato.
No.
A rutabaga.
Rhubarb.
Rhubarb, another one.
No.
I don't think I've ever had either of those.
I've had the strawberry
Rob,
rhubarb
can you run
pie.
Out? Can you run out and get some now?
Yeah,
get
sure.
a rutabaga while you're at it.
No, thank you. All right. Recently, just a couple of weeks ago, in the news, now listen, this made national news. It wasn't just news for Beatles fans before you give me a dirty look, Gary Stein.
I can give you a dirty look anytime I want. It doesn't have to be about Beatles stuff.
Well, that's true.
Beatles!
Maybe you heard on the news that they recently discovered a guitar that John Lennon owned when he was a member of the Beatles, and actually he wrote, along with Paul McCartney, some of their most iconic songs on this guitar. It's a guitar that he loved that went missing. If I recall correctly, it was stolen, I think in 1964 or something like that. Well, it's been discovered after all these years. I don't really know all the details of it, but we've got someone joining us who does know the details. It's going to bring us up to date and tell us how you, if you're filthy rich, could actually own this guitar or any of his own memorabilia. First, as we bring him in, can I hear a little bit of She Loves You?
She loves you.
People ask me all the time, what's your favorite Beatles song?
Yeah.
Very hard to answer, but I usually say this song, which is a surprise to people.
I love this song, but you know, I told John and Paul
that she
no, wait a minute, this is for real.
Okay.
I said She Likes You isn't strong enough. I said, you know what? Commit. That's what people want.
That's right.
And one of them said, I don't remember which one, but they said, how about She Loves You?
And you
I said that would work. And then I flew home from Liverpool.
What an influence on popular music Gary Stein has been. Fantastic. Joining us here in the studio is a very good friend, a very highly regarded person in the world of Beatles knowledge and all of that kind of stuff. Russ Leese is with us.
All right.
Russ. Thank you, Tony. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's great to be here. Gary and Rob as well. I appreciate you guys inviting me down.
You and I talked about a month or so ago. We hadn't talked for quite some time. And I did not know this. You actually listen to the show.
Oh, all the time. I love the show.
That's great.
Yeah, don't miss an episode. It's a great show.
That's great. Thank you very much. We appreciate
it. I just met you today. I like you so much.
It's one of the few shows, and I told you this, that really when I'm by myself, because if I'm work in my office all day, and it's a new podcast and I have it on.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the few shows that'll make me laugh out loud by myself, and that doesn't happen.
That's great.
Oh, thank you.
That's what we like to hear.
That's great.
We really
hear.
Do like to hear that. All right, let me give a little background on you. First of all, you got a couple of companies that people may or may not be aware of. Beatlesuits.com. That's how you and I first met, through Beatlesuits.com. You recreate suits and outfits that the Beatles wore when they were together, right?
Right. I've spent my whole adult life actually in the men's clothing industry.
Mm-hmm.
I own a clothing store out in PG County here in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And when I closed the store up, I was looking for something else to get into. But, you know, parallel to that, I'm a big Beatle fan and been a big collector for over 35 years. And I own a number of the clothing pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of amazed that nobody had ever replicated the iconic things that they wore on stage that you see in all the photographs. And I was pretty good friends with some of the major trib bands, and they kept sort of pushing me into this. And we decided, well, let's replicate them. And I was in the right place at the right time because the original patterns for these don't exist anymore.
Right.
But if you have an original piece, in essence, you have the pattern.
Right.
We developed the patterns from the original pieces and made them. We started with the famous Shea jackets from 65 Shea Show. And
which I have one of those.
Right.
And now here's, wow. when we say you replicate them, I mean, and this is really a perfect marriage because of your background in the clothing industry. You go down to the buttons, the lining that was in the jacket, all the correct fabric and all of that, right?
Well, for the Shea jacket, the button actually was originally made over in Italy, and I sacrilegiously cut one of the buttons off of Paul's original jacket, which I own. We sent it over. They made a mold of it because you can't find that button anywhere.
Right,
it was a fairly unique button. And we had them made from the mold. They sent me the original back. It went, obviously, back on the jacket.
Right.
And that's where we got the jackets for that one.
Could I just say one thing?
Sure.
I should ask Tony. Tony, can I just say one thing?
Oh, now you're part of this, too.
Is it okay if I just say one thing?
Yes, you're not excused.
I'm a 39 regular. And that's not a typical size, but I just thought I would leave that with you for whatever reason. I just want you to know that I'm a 39 regular.
You know, it's interesting that you said 39 regular because Paul's jacket measures. Of course, it doesn't have a size in it because it was custom made.
Right.
But if you put a tape measure to it, it is a 39 regular,
wow.
Which is an odd size.
Wow.
Do you know how tall Paul was?
Yeah. I had a reason to email exchange with the son of a tailor in Japan when they went over and did the played the Budokan shows in 66. Mm-hmm. They were holed up in their hotel room, but they had some tailors come up, and Paul had a couple suits custom made for him. And there are famous pictures of the tailors with tape measures measuring him. But in his stocking feet, he measures 5'9¾".
Wow. How tall are you?
5'9".
Holy cow. Stand up for a minute, because you're Paul McCartney size. Let me see this. This is cool.
There
it's,
you go.
It's like we're looking at Paul McCartney with Ringo's nose.
Wow. Yeah, you couldn't do, you know, and you say that I can't really just give a compliment. Thank God you can't either. But so really what it means is that if I wore that jacket, like, you know, just out to a restaurant or something, I would fit it pretty well. The original. The real one.
Well, you probably would fit it perfectly, actually.
Uh-huh.
It's a shame that won't happen. But we'd be happy to sell you one just like
it.
Really?
There you go.
Do I get the talk show discount?
We'll talk.
Okay.
I love how Gary uses this show to try to get things at a discount.
I mean, it's just how many jackets is he going to get out of the show?
Right, that's right.
Not everybody's sitting here as a billionaire, Tony. Okay?
Anyway, we'll talk to you about your clothes. Beetlesuits.com, Fab Four Exhibits. We'll tell you why you want to know about that in a moment. Russ, tell us about this guitar. It was John Lennon. It's an acoustic guitar.
Right. A Gibson J160E is the model number. And this guitar is a big deal. There's a lot of Beatle guitars over the years have come on the market. Usually it's something that were in and out of their hands for a short period of time, or maybe a loaner or something like that. That's not this guitar. This guitar is a big deal, and it will be the biggest Beatle guitar to ever come up for public auction. And probably one of the bigger guitars, period, to ever come
up. In the rock world. This was a guitar that John used. He did compose on this, and it's the early 60s, right?
Yeah. John and George both got identical guitars in 1962. So the first guitars that were actually bought for them, because up to this period, you know, obviously they were acquiring their own.
Right.
But Brian Epstein had come in, was already, they were under management to him. And these were the first instruments that Brian bought for the band. And virtually right away, they were writing with him. They were performing with him on stage. It was definitely a favorite guitar of John's.
Right.
The story of how the guitar was found.
Well, before you give me how it was found, how was it lost? Was it stolen?
It disappeared backstage at Finsbury Park. The Beatles were doing a series of Christmas shows in December of 63.
Okay.
Now, there's a discrepancy as to whether it was stolen or lost.
Okay.
Both words have been used. Mal Evans, who was their equipment guy, basically says he lost it and got the wrath from John that taking place.
Right.
But they really don't describe it actually as somebody running off with it. So we don't know whether it was left at the theater or what the situation was.
But so, John was very angry about it. I remember that. And disappointed that he no longer had this guitar.
Very upset. And shortly thereafter replaced it with a 1964 model Gibson J160E.
Okay. Right. All right. So now tell us the story. I don't know how you want to tell it, where it's been all this time or whatever. But.
And let me add that this guitar, I mean, you hear it on I Want to Hold Your Hand. You hear it on She Loves You. A lot of these classic early stuff virtually throughout the first two albums. So it's a major, major piece.
Okay. Very good. Very good. So where has it been?
Well, this was one of the famous lost guitars. And McCartney has a cavern bass that all the collectors are wondering where it is too. This guitar was in the possession of a guy named John McCall for 46 years, basically. And the story is John was in his early 20s in the mid 60s. Was in the Army, actually did a tour of duty in Vietnam. He was a Vietnam vet, came back in early 68, certainly was affected by the music explosion in the U.S., the whole Woodstock generation, basically wanted to learn to play guitar, went into a little guitar shop in Southern California, a used instrument shop. Hanging on the wall was this Gibson J160E, pulled it down, played around with it, loved it, bought the guitar and took it home. It was just his personal acoustic guitar, no serious significance to it.
He just said guitar to play
just played
around
it. It's one of those guitars that just were sitting in the corner basically for 46 years. It was his go-to acoustic.
Isn't that crazy? Wow. And this guy, so John McCall, he's not a famous musician or anything like that.
No, he's not at all. I played locally in some bands, I guess, like that, and got to be fairly proficient with the guitar, but no, not a well-known person, not a recording artist or anything like
all
that.
Right.
And there's another guy locally who, guitarist of a little bit more renown in the San Diego area. He and John were friends, and he used to have this jam in his studio bi-weekly or so.
Uh-huh.
And in, I guess it was spring of last year, April of 2014, they had a get-together with a handful of them just sitting around jamming for a few hours. And when they got up to leave, John walked through Mark, this guitar teacher's office with, mm-hmm. he was jamming with. And on the table was a copy of Guitar Aficionado magazine from mm-hmm. the May of 2012 issue, which had an expose on George Harrison's guitar collection.
Oh, with pictures.
With
of
pictures
all, yes,
and,
yeah,
and right. little bios of the instruments that right. were all part of the George Harrison estate. And he's flipping through it. And they see George's J160E, which was identical to John's. And he's reading about it. But what caught his attention were the fact that in the photographs of George's guitar, there were scratches in exactly the same places where he had worn marks, and which he thought was really odd.
Mm-hmm.
So he starts talking about this with his guitar instructor. And the more they read about it and the more they dig online, the more things are operating parallel. And the similarities are very uncanny.
Mm-hmm.
So they go out and they buy a copy of the book Beatles Gear, written by Andy Dubuque, who mm-hmm. gives the bios of Andy.
All
is basically
gear.
The
yeah.
go-to guy for yeah. Beatle instruments.
Yeah.
And in there are the serial numbers of the guitar. And then he comes to find out that the serial number of his guitar is 4 digits off from the serial number in the guitar that's part of the George Harrison estate.
Okay.
And then
so
bells go off.
Right, because it's very close then.
So they track Andy down in Rochester, New York, call him and start describing what's going on here, you know, and because by now he's found out that the original John guitar
went missing.
Andy's intrigued, but Andy hears this kind of stuff all the time.
Sure.
And so he said, well, send me some pictures and, you know, I'll take a look when I have a few minutes. They send pictures and wow, the wood grain looks very similar. What's going on? So Andy had to fly out for the NAMM show. It takes place in January of this year. And while he's there, John comes up to L.A.
John McCall
does, right. And they sit down, and Andy brought all of his documentation with him and his close-up, you know, photographs and everything. Mm-hmm. Turns out it is the guitar.
Wow.
It's just mind-blowing.
Wow.
They were able to verify it not only through the serial number, but the scratches on the guitar match up to scratches from photographs of the guitar in John's hands in 1962.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
The tortoise shell pickguard, which is an arbitrary pattern. Mm-hmm. It's not a repeated sort of thing. The pickguard pattern matches perfectly, which is impossible unless mm-hmm. you've got the same guitar in your mm-hmm. hand. But more importantly than anything, you can't fake a wood grain. The wood grain right. is the wood grain, and it matches up identically. There's no question it is the guitar. So this guitar has been sitting in this guy's corner for 46 years.
Unbelievable.
Having no idea the significance of it.
Wow. That, can you imagine finding something
like
that
in your house?
It's
the Holy
Grail. It is. Yeah. In many ways, it is. It is. So, and I can't imagine Andy's, you know, when he, because since he's the guy who has written the book on the Beatles gear and he knows it all, and so he knows this is, here's a piece, a significant piece of history, rock and roll history, that's gone missing, and then all of a sudden it's sitting right in front of him, and he's confirming it through all his documentation. That's unbelievable to me.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, he was speechless. He couldn't believe that he had stumbled onto this and was called into this.
So now this guitar, this was what the news was, number one, that it was found, but number two, it's going up for auction.
It is going up for auction in November, later on this year, on November 6th and 7th at Julian's Auctions in Beverly Hills.
Mm.
It'll be sold with lots of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yoko is aware that it is going off. The wholesale has her blessings. And so it'll be very interesting to see what it brings, but it's going to be substantial.
Is anybody predicting, I mean, you know, nobody can really say what it could fetch, but is anybody predicting what that find is worth?
Well, the estimates in the catalog are going to be 600,000 to 800,000, but those estimates are always lowballed.
Mm-hmm.
So very possibly we're talking about 900,000 and could top
could
a,
be
million.
A million. Right?
Sure,
should,
wow,
could definitely be a million.
Now you say Yoko, it has her blessing. What about John's son Julian? Because I know Julian has tried to collect as much as he can. It's weird. He's had to kind of collect like other collectors because so much stuff he didn't have anymore from when he was growing up.
It's a shame, actually, that Julian has to build his collection by writing checks for it,
right.
like the rest of us. It
right.
shouldn't be that way. But I don't know. I haven't heard any feedback with regard to Julian's take on the whole thing. Obviously,
mm-hmm.
he knows about it. and I'm sure would love to have it. We'll see.
Wouldn't it be awful, in a way, if he was bidding, if he was there bidding for it?
It has happened. Julian, his collection has basically been built through the auction houses,
Wow.
And, you know, I would suspect there have been a couple of times he's lost out because someone has outbid him.
Right.
That's what really happened to Paul McCartney when he wanted to buy back the Beatles, the song rights, the publishing rights to the Beatles music. He got outbid years ago. And, it's not my music anymore, I guess.
Well, Paul frequently has reps at these auctions as well.
Yeah.
Who just sort of sit back, you know.
And that's the other thing, because hopefully it would be bought by someone who would then do what you've done with your collection. Your collection has been on loan for quite some time to the Grammy people, right?
It's actually myself and three other partners. We formed a partnership.
Gotcha.
And it took us a number of years. Our idea was to have some kind of a traveling museum that would go to the major cities for 3-month stints. And it took a number of years to get this sort of off the ground and moving. But we did. We opened in New York next year and we'll be traveling throughout the remainder of 2016.
So hopefully that's what would happen to this guitar. But it is also very possible. I know that there are some very serious collectors out there, many of them in Japan apparently, who shell out big money and then they take it and it's in their house.
Right. We don't see it anymore.
Right.
Which would be a shame. Hopefully it does go to somebody who allows people to see it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's pretty incredible. So that's in November.
November 6th and 7th.
Okay.
Right.
I mentioned earlier in the show some of the items that you have collected over the years, which are significant items as well. And so now you've decided to part company with the stuff?
Yeah, I've been collecting a little over 35 years. And my idea really all along was probably to let it go in 2014 because it was the big anniversary year. Mm-hmm. And I figured there'd be plenty of hype throughout the media for it. And if I was going to sell, that would be a good time. I don't want to die with this stuff.
Right.
It needs to, you know, it's always been considered my retirement. So, however, a number of years ago, as I said, I got wrapped up in this partnership to be able to exhibit this stuff. And that kind of meant more to me at the time. So we have an exhibit run that runs through the end of 2016. And my thought all along was that as soon as the exhibit run is over, I'll finally put it all back up and
so
for sale.
Your stuff will be available for auction as well.
Right. But what has happened, sort of the perfect storm has happened, and this fall will, for many reasons actually, will turn out to be the perfect time to sell.
Uh-huh.
So I've worked out a deal with the auction house whereby the successful bidders will have to leave the items in the current exhibit through the end of 2016.
Gotcha.
They will take title to it. They will buy it. It will be theirs, but it will have to remain in the exhibit for a year, and then they can do with it what they
want. And how many items are you selling?
Probably about 25 or so.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, I mentioned the drum head from the Ed Sullivan Show, Paul's jacket, Ringo's jacket from Abbey Road, right?
Correct, right.
What are some of the other items you
have? I have a pair of John's glasses, the little round granny glasses from 67, the year of Sgt. Pepper.
Wow.
A lot of paper items, performance contracts
and stuff like
things
that.
Like that, right?
What's your favorite item?
Oh, well, the drum head is the centerpiece.
Yeah.
It's kind of like become my right arm. It's people who have heard of me generally associate the fact that I own the drum head, and that's how they know
name. That's right.
So,
I have to say, I went to Russ's house several years ago where he had most of this on display. You go down in the basement, and it was beautiful. And to be standing in front of that drum head and it's set up like with a drum and all that kind of stuff. Just amazing.
Well, it's the iconic thing that we all know. And I don't think you even had to be a Beatles fan to know that or to see them on the Ed Sullivan Show, you know.
Well, Tony, your reaction is today my reaction because when it's on display in the base, I'll go down late at night and just stand in front of it and feel the same things you just described.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had it for 20 years. It doesn't wear off.
That's incredible. That's just amazing
it
stuff.
Is.
Was there ever anything that you wanted to get that you couldn't get?
Yeah, there was a number of things where I lost out on the bidding.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, one specific piece that is part of our exhibit is a piece that I was the underbidder on. And I got to know the guy who did buy it, and he did lend it. But it is a document that Brian Epstein had drawn up the weekend of the first Sullivan Show because he didn't know what U.S. law was with regard to him being able to negotiate and represent the Beatles in the United States. So he had his New York lawyer draw up this short little one-paragraph document saying that the Beatles give authority to Brian Epstein to negotiate deals and appearances in the U.S. signed John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George, which is, I salivate over that that little piece of paper.
Right.
But Bruce Minneroff from New York is the owner of that, and he was generous enough to let us have it for the exhibit. So,
speaking of autographs, I know this is a podcast, but we're going to post a picture. You have brought something with you that we can see.
I did bring a an all four autographed piece from 63.
Can you grab that just so we can pass that around? And and this, I actually, the one really amazing thing that I own is a set of autographs, a piece of paper that the four of them signed, and I've got it on display and all that kind of stuff. They're hard to verify, and they're few and far between, because
single pieces with all four are.
Right. Look at this. Look at that. And so what is that? That's a that's a picture book.
Yeah, it's a little fanzine kind of picture book that you would get in Woolworths or something.
It says 1963 on the autograph side, right?
Right.
Because this is from England.
Yeah, that's from 63, right, England.
Little fan, super glossy, 12 super glossy pictures of your favorites. And the four of them signed what looks like one of the cards from that collection.
Exactly.
But I like that that's before they were famous here.
Right, that's right, that's right.
Yeah, it's a little accordion thing, and they signed one of the pages on it.
Very nice. Do you have a bunch of, well, I guess if you have contracts and stuff, you have several. Don't you have, didn't I see like checks? Like George Harrison signed checks and stuff like that.
Yeah, I have a couple of Apple checks that one George signed, one that Ringo signed. George signed all the Apple Films checks. This is the way the sort of the Beatles broke it down.
Mm-hmm.
Ringo signed some of the music checks, and then John and Paul quite often would sign both checks. It would be a double endorsement on it, and those checks actually go for a lot. So
very cool.
It's funny to think of a check going for a lot of money.
Right? Yeah, that's right. Gary, you should tell him about the jacket that you have that Ringo signed for you.
Oh, wow. Did you hear me say it on the show?
I heard it.
I heard earlier about the jacket. Yeah, I'd love... You know what? You should have brought it with you today. I would have loved to have seen it.
Yeah.
It would have been great.
I mean, I have to frame it.
We could have traded for something.
Yes. There you go.
Well, I was thinking I could give you the jacket for the drumhead.
yes, actually.
Not for that.
I bought a drumhead for you.
Not that one.
He would make that trade.
He's trying to fool me. Well, the jacket was cool because Ringo doodled all over the jacket. You know, I mean, not a lot, but he put glasses on John. He put a halo on his own head. He drew from his autograph down to the bottom where his little piece of film strip was. So
that's
got to be worth something.
Yeah.
And it's worth the fact that he did it for me.
Right.
And there's a picture of the jacket on our Facebook and I believe our Twitter page as well.
That's
at T-Perk Show and the Tony Perkins Show. And go back to the Ringo Show. I think it's episode 38 and you can listen to the full story that Gary tells.
Yeah, that's right. That's
you
right.
just do a beautiful reset.
You're fantastic.
You really do.
You're fantastic. You're
really... We were thinking of firing you, but we're so not going to do that right
one
now.
One more week.
But I need to frame it, right, to make sure that I'm actually protecting this jacket. I've never done it.
Yeah, and you want to keep it out of the sunlight or any direct light also because you don't want the signature to fade.
And he used the Sharpie, so a Sharpie doesn't really last forever, you know.
Not in the right light it won't.
Right.
So yeah, okay. Be careful with it.
Yeah, you need to do that.
Yeah, like
he's actually worn the jacket.
Yeah, I used to.
No, no.
Well, I wore it a few times. This is not Family Feud. What's with the button?
Show me Ringo jacket.
All right, Russ. Well, thank you for explaining all this to us. It's absolutely fascinating. Do you wish you could bid on the guitar or...
I do, but that would sort of defeat the purpose
Absolutely.
Of why I'm selling in the
Absolutely.
First place. You
right,
know,
I'm.
It's time for retirement and time to reap whatever benefits the equity of all having all this stuff is. So
and to spread it around. And
Tony's got the money to buy the whole collection.
No, I don't.
He really does.
You know what? If I did, I'd buy something from you. I'd buy one of those pieces. Absolutely.
I think you two should talk after the show and at least buy something.
It'll be a short conversation.
One piece.
Russ Lease. Listen, if you're in a Beatles tribute band and you want the most authentic costumes you possibly could get, you want to go through Russ. All the big bands do. Frankly, if you're like me, I'm just a Beatles fan, and I've got the Shea Stadium jacket in my room. People come in, they say, "What jacket is that?" I say, "That's Paul's jacket from Shea Stadium." They say, "Really?" I say, "No, it's a copy." Sometimes I let them think it
you
is.
Cop to the copy,
right,
huh?
Yeah, no, I tell them the truth. Beatlesuits.com and Fab Four Exhibits. That's the partnership that you have?
That is the partnership under which we tour the exhibit. And it's a sizable exhibit. It's 5,000 square feet. It's myself and three other partners. It is basically a combination of our collections. Two of us collect one-of-a-kind things like the things you mentioned. The other two guys are the biggest collectors in this country of all the licensed merchandise that was available in the 60s, all the original lunch boxes and all that kind of stuff. Right. So it's an all-encompassing 5,000 square foot exhibit.
And I don't mean to put you on the spot. It's the 4th of July. Where is that collection now? Where can people see this?
Sure. Right now it's in Austin, Texas at the LBJ Presidential Library.
Oh, cool.
We're then going to Mississippi. For whatever reason, it's very attractive to presidential libraries. The Clinton Library in Arkansas is taking it.
Interesting.
And at the end of 2016, it'll be up at the JFK up in Boston.
And is there a place where people can go to get information about that?
Yeah, fab4exhibits.com.
There you go.
When I was in L.A. yesterday and I was having lunch with Ringo, he said, I told him you were going to be on the show today. And he said that he didn't want to burst your bubble, but he said none of your stuff is authentic. So that you have some of the finest copies in the world. And he said, and tell him if he ever comes to this restaurant, the gorgonzola salad is really good.
You know what? You know what? Don't do any business with Gary, because obviously
we're going to make him pay double.
He's a big liar. Russ, thank you
thank
for coming
you so
in.
Much
great
for
to
being
have you here.
Here.
And thanks for listening to
thanks
the show.
Thanks for inviting me down. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Tell you something, I wanna hold your hand and hear the Beatles on 77 WABC.
The Tony Perkins Show, featuring Gary Stein.
Yeah, I love those jingles.
Oh,
I love
me
those
too.
Old jingles.
I love that.
WABC, that's great. How about Russ Lee?
Do you think that I got my order in for for a new jacket?
Yes, you got several orders.
39 regular.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
I'm shameless.
You are shameless. That's right. So we thank Russ. Now, I want to go back to the Independence Day theme, since it is the 4th of July.
Right. We've done such a good job with it so far.
I love the fireworks. So right outside our studios, they've got them going on.
Or there's an air raid.
One or the other. You found something, because we were decided, okay, let's look for Independence Day-oriented stuff.
Yes.
I wanted to find a comedy routine.
I was looking for it, but I found something else.
You found something else, which is really great. I don't know this guy, but others do. I have his name right here. It is Mark Dice.
Yes. I didn't know Mark Dice. He's listed as an activist and
author. Yeah.
Not comic.
Right, right.
But he does this wonderful man on the street thing. He's done a bunch of packages that have been on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. He's got a channel on YouTube.
He's got a channel, and he. I found one that is simply about the 4th of July, asking people questions really where they should know the answers.
Right.
And he is wonderful at directing it as a man on the street guy.
And he mixes it up a little. He says some things that are wrong.
Oh, they're off the wall.
Just to see if people notice. It's in California. We're going to play some now. This is, if you want to find his channel, it's youtube.com/Mark Dice. I think we should get this guy on the show sometime.
Oh, we definitely should.
All right, let's listen to Mark Dice on Independence Day.
When the founding fathers signed the Declaration of Independence in 1976, what country did we break away from?
Wait, what?
Hold on, this is just her.
Oh, gosh.
What country did we break away from back in 1976 when the Declaration of Independence was signed?
It's a really good question.
You know, we have a big party. Everybody celebrates and gets drunk and barbecue.
July, I love that.
But you don't know why we celebrate.
No, it's
China.
China.
We Declaration of Independence. We broke away.
I knew that. China.
Okay. When we declared independence from China back in 1776, and Jesse Ventura signed the Declaration of Independence, what year was that?
Oh God.
That's
Wait,
a tough
Jesse
one.
Ventura signed the Declaration.
Yeah, hold on. Just him. We'll get to you in a minute.
I have no
what
idea.
What year was that? The Declaration of Independence signed when we
had
the Revolutionary War against China.
It's been so long. All right. I haven't had to remember that forever.
Who cares about American history and our founding, right? Talking about the Chinese Revolutionary War.
Okay.
When we signed the Declaration of Independence in 1776 and broke away from China, what year was the Declaration of Independence signed?
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh, it was 18 something.
18 something.
I don't know.
You don't know. Okay. Have a nice life. When the founding fathers signed the Declaration of Independence in 1776, what year did they sign the Declaration of Independence and break away from England to start America?
78. I don't know.
1978? When Jesse Ventura and Jack Lemmon and the other founding fathers signed the Declaration of Independence, what year was that?
I don't know.
Have a nice life.
1812.
The Declaration of Independence was signed in
1762.
1762. Okay, zombie.
Hey, what is it?
What year was the Declaration of Independence signed by Jesse Ventura and Jack Lemmon?
1842.
What date specifically? The day.
November 2nd. Wait, what?
November 2nd. What year was the Declaration of Independence signed? Just
what? 1774?
1974.
There you go. 1974.
1974. You got any big plans for the 4th of July this year when we celebrate our independence from Mexico? Are you going to be doing anything to sort of reflect on that independence, the breakaway from them?
Yeah, American style. Party.
Getting drunk and smoking some weed.
Yeah, man. Sacrament, one love.
This is getting to be sad.
I think he's running for president, that guy.
That dude is just, and he's got dreadlocks and everything. He's just like a hippie guy.
Yeah.
He's
a happy hippie. Yeah.
You know, here's the thing about this. It's funny, but then it starts to become sad.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's absolutely both. Yeah. You know, we're laughing at this because it's good comedy. But on the other hand, we're pretty dumb out there.
Well, when he says, give me the date, and they say November 2nd, they're just taking a shot. They're hoping to get it right, out of 365 possible dates.
Absolutely. Just playing the odds.
I think it's like trying to win the lottery. It's just I don't know.
It's like betting double zero on a roulette wheel.
Right. Well, this is all, you know, he's got a bunch of videos on a bunch of different topics where he goes out into the street and asks people these questions, and then he puts it all together. Again, it's Mark Dice. He has a YouTube channel, youtube.com/Mark Dice.
And maybe we'll have a reason to play some more of his stuff, you know.
And I want to try to get him on the show.
Yeah, we will get him. I will reach out.
I think people here, now that's in California.
You're right.
And, you know, Jay Leno has done that kind of thing, the jaywalking thing.
All that man on the street stuff.
Which I used,
Letterman.
I had the same reaction watching Jay Leno stuff. It's funny, and then after a little bit, I had to turn it off. I was so upset.
It's Jay jaw dropping.
And Jimmy Kimmel also does Live Witness News.
That is amazing.
It's hysterical.
It's hysterical.
Yes.
But people just want to feel like they're being included and they want to be on TV. The funniest one I ever saw Kimmel do was, I guess it was on Martin Luther King Day, where he asked people, hey, did you see Martin Luther King's speech the other day on Martin Luther King Day?
Yes.
And what did you think? And some said, I thought it was great.
Great
I thought it was
speech.
Very powerful. And then it's not Kimmel. It's someone else.
Sorry, I missed it.
Well, yeah, sorry I missed it. And then he said, did you think he'd put on some weight? Did he look like a little heavier? And people were like, yeah, I thought he could lose some pounds. It's like, what are you talking about? Now
really?
You're just lying. It's crazy.
Wow.
I think people, because we're in Washington, I think if we were to do that here, I bet we would get better responses. I think Washington is an intelligent town.
Where, really?
Why do you look like I'm wrong?
Well, no, I'm not looking at you like you're wrong. I'm thinking, really? You want to find out? We should find out.
Well, in the surveys that are always coming out about the most intelligent cities in the country, Washington is always at the top based on, you know, universities, libraries, graduate degrees, that kind of thing.
Let me ask you something, youngster. Do you have a street mic and a thing that we could hook up and go out?
A street mic and a thing?
Yeah.
Street mic.
That's a technical term.
That was my rap name in the 90s.
Street mic.
I actually do. I have a little portable microphone.
Oh, we should do this. We should
boy.
Do this. We're in Georgetown.
Boy.
It's a Saturday. It's a nice Saturday afternoon.
Right.
Can we take it? I mean, do we have to do anything complicated?
Can you handle pushing record?
No, we'll get you to do that. Okay. We might do it wrong.
Yeah.
What do you say? Let's go on the street.
Yes.
Let's make something happen.
All right. So here's what we're going to do it right now. We'll go out. We'll see what we get.
Yeah.
And all right. Let's do it. Let's go on the street.
Here we go.
What is the main way we celebrate 4th of July?
The main way?
When you think of the 4th of July, what's the first thing you think of?
To get drunk.
This is for our 4th of July episode. First question will go to the lovely lady here. When Abraham Lincoln wrote the Declaration of Independence, do you think he knew it would be such a big deal?
I don't think he knew that because he thought a lot about it. He was more concerned with all the people that had died and was talking about the loss of life and how it was important. But he did not realize.
Okay.
He actually struggled quite a bit with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Whose signature is the biggest on the Declaration of Independence? Is it Abraham Lincoln's, Benjamin Franklin's, or John Hancock's?
John Hancock's.
John Hancock. Compared to his signature, how big is Abraham Lincoln's?
It is massive.
It's massive.
I don't know. Yeah. Let's go with on the larger side.
Do you think his signature is the biggest because he was black?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Seemed to be another area there.
Whose signature on the Declaration of Independence is larger? John Hancock's or Abraham Lincoln's?
John Hancock.
Who at the bottom of the Declaration of Independence has the biggest signature?
John Hancock?
Very good. Yes. That's great. Yes. That's great. Okay. Yes. And do you think his signature is the biggest because he was black?
Surely he wasn't black because those were all slave-owning white guys back then.
In what year was the Declaration of Independence signed? I'll bet you know.
1865?
Can you name one person who signed it?
Jefferson.
Jefferson, that's right. George Jefferson.
No.
Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, that's right. And was Thomas Jefferson's wife named Wheezy?
No,
it was not.
Wheezy was moving on up.
To the east side.
Where we're moving on up. Moving on up to the east side.
The Declaration of Independence, what did that document do?
Established the United States of America as a self-providing country.
Okay.
Yeah. From where?
England.
Okay, very good. Let me ask you this. Abraham Lincoln is best known for what?
A Gettysburg Address or the Civil War or being assassinated.
Yes, okay, very good. The Civil War, whose side was he on?
Who's on the North?
He's your specialist on the Civil War here.
Degree. You have a history degree. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Rob Ford, what are you getting us the wrong people for?
All right, here's your bonus question, Mr. History Major. Give me the first names of the Jackson Five.
I can't do that. I definitely can't.
Can you name, give me the first names of the Jackson Five?
Tito.
Tito first? Wow.
No, of course Mike.
Mike? Oh, you know these.
Randy.
He Tito. Wasn't an original, but okay, that's fine.
I think that was before my time.
It probably was. Jermaine.
Ringo.
Yeah.
Well, Papa Joe Jackson. I know we all know him.
Oh, that's right.
So he was the ringleader.
How about this? Is he talking Jackson 5? In what year did they record My Way?
That would be...
Do you know the words to My Way?
No, I don't know.
I'll start her out. And now the end is near.
And now I face
my...
Only fear.
My only fear, he said.
So...
And now... The end is near, and so I face the final curtain. Where are you from?
Switzerland.
Switzerland. We love Switzerland. That's a wonderful country.
You know, it is not Sweden, sir. I am just saying, because everybody in America confuses it with Sweden.
How long have you been here in America?
It's been 1.5 years.
1.5 years. Yeah. Here's our question. What did the Declaration of Independence do for America?
Declaration of Independence, I mean, for every country, that means that you are on your, like, depending on your government and you don't depend on any other government anymore. And so I guess you are under one system and under different laws that have been voted by the population.
Gary, is that a good answer?
Yeah.
It's a very good answer for somebody from Switzerland.
Could I ask
you something. How long is this going to go? Our history test.
Why does every woman ask you that?
Just to stay with my history, this is only going to go for a couple of seconds.
Switzerland has been here for a year and a half. Have you done sightseeing here in Washington?
Yes, you have a beautiful city. It is so green, wonderful people. Yeah, I did some sightseeing, yeah.
Did you see the Washington Monument?
Yes, I did.
Did you see the Liberty Bell?
No.
No? Did you go through Harlem? See, we're trying to stump you, but you're very good. You're very good.
This you is make me feel so
you're
blonde.
Way, you're all way so too smart.
You make me feel so blonde.
You had a very hairy stomach. I saw it.
How did you say that I have a hairy stomach? It's not that hairy.
He just showed me his stomach a week ago, and I said, oh, my God, it's so hairy. Stand up. Stand up. Oh. All right, pull the shirt up. Pull the shirt up. Okay, a little...
Is it surprising to you that I'm a little bit loose?
It is, yes. I also did not know you were that hairy.
I didn't pull my shirt up.
Yes, you did. The microphone fell down, and then your shirt went up.
And you saw that I had a hairy stomach.
You're the most hairy American I've ever seen.
Do you think that I should actually use curlers on my stomach?
No, I would suggest you to braid it.
Braid it?
Yes.
Would you like to braid it for me?
Oh. No, I mean, I think, what is the airline called that flies really cheaply to Jamaica?
Do you think I should wax my stomach and get rid of the hair?
No, totally stay natural. I'm pro-nature. I like everything, how God created it. I'm done with fake things.
You know what? I'm just finding out that God actually must have created a very hairy stomach on me, because I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's surely for a reason.
It's to cover up his flab.
It's Tony and Gary, the Tony Perkins Show.
All right, that was, you know, listen.
That was fun.
That was fun. We completely ripped off Mark Dykes, although we kind of ad-libbed and did a little bit of our own
stuff.
Well,
we went to places we had no idea we were going, but that's typical of us. And it was great to be out on the street and just kind of meet people,
I want to do that again. And now, so through the magic of radio, we did all that, and then Rob pulled it all together real quick. Nice job,
Thank
Rob
you so
Ford.
Much, Rob
very,
Ford.
Very good. Very,
yeah,
very
absolutely.
Good.
Beautifully done. We learned a lot. They learned a lot, I think, the people on the street.
We will do that again.
Yes,
we
definitely.
Will do that again. All right. I think that is that's about our show, right?
That's about it.
Yeah, okay.
Tony, I think that's just about it.
Yeah. listen, we wish you all a very happy 4th of July. I hope you're spending it with family and picnicking and all that kind
of
stuff.
If you're using fireworks, please be very careful. Be very safe.
That's right. You don't want to. You know what I hate? And we did it on Channel 5. We do it every year. There's certain things that you always do. When the first snowstorm comes.
Yeah.
You got to show the footage of the bare shelves in the store. No toilet paper, no milk, you know. And, of course, a couple of days ago, we have the story where be careful with the fireworks. And the firefighters have the dummy mannequin.
Yes.
And the thing blows up in the hand and blows his hand off. I don't know why we don't just show the same footage every year.
It seems like we do.
Yeah. Every year we go out and shoot this.
Right.
It's the
right.
same thing.
Right.
The mannequin hand blowing off.
What the other thing I can't stand, just real quick here at the end. All the people who make a photo album on your Facebook or your Twitter, Instagram, whatever, of all the pictures of fireworks you took on 4th of July. Guess what everybody else was doing on the 4th of July? They're watching fireworks too. And you know what doesn't look that great in a picture?
It doesn't.
Fireworks. They all look the same. The lighting is bad. And you have an album of like 60 fireworks on there. You don't need them.
You know,
don't do it. Now I know
you're fired up.
Now what's going to happen is everybody's going to tweet us at T Perk Show or post pictures to our Facebook page, and it's just going to piss me off.
I don't.
It's
not
good.
I don't recommend that. I recommend that you send all of your fireworks pictures to the Rob Ford Facebook page.
Oh no!
And you leave us out of this because we didn't say anything bad about your fireworks. That was all Rob freelancing.
That is, it's the worst. Please don't do it.
That is the most fired up I've ever
seen
you.
I have never seen that before.
No pun intended.
No.
Wow. It is the worst.
He's you know, he's got a lot of anger.
He is right, though. Pictures of, you can't capture fireworks in a picture.
The only good pictures are time lapse, where it's a whole bunch of fireworks all at once, which doesn't really truly represent.
And guess what? Once you've seen one picture, you've seen them all.
Yeah.
All right. So next time I see you guys, I'm going to bring in some of my fireworks pictures that I actually did do.
And are they good?
Yeah. It's not for me to say.
Okay. It's not for me to say. Johnny Mathis.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. All right.
What did Johnny Mathis do before he became a singer? What did he want to do with his life? What did he expect to be as a professional?
I'm going to guess a boxer.
That's a very good guess, but it's wrong, okay. But it's the right sort of thing.
Okay.
Professional baseball player.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I didn't know that.
I did not know that.
That is weird stuff.
That's weird.
Wild.
That is wild.
Yes. Oh, even Rob knows the reference.
Well, he's around us too much.
My mom loves Johnny Mathis. I grew up hearing Johnny Mathis in the house all the time. And I like Johnny Mathis.
I'm not a fan of Johnny Mathis. No.
I like him.
You know, all the comics that do the impressions of him with a little catch in the throat.
Yes, John Biner did the best.
He did. Yeah. Where there's like a missing sound, right?
That's right.
But I felt that was sort of irritating, that he had a missing thing, you know.
Maybe
his thing. You are getting pushy, Rob Ford.
What is happening with this guy?
You know, he's taken over. We're talking Johnny Mathis here.
He's had enough.
And he's decided the show's over.
Wow.
The only thing that's over is you.
Have a happy 4th of July. We're running over time.
You know
or
what?
Something?
For 24, is he strict?
Yeah.
He's very strict.
Join us on the next episode. Our thanks to Russ Leese. Thanks for listening. And we'll introduce our new producer on the next edition of the show.
Thanks to Johnny Mathis also.
Tony Perkins Show, a Moore Broadcasting presentation. This is Dude Walker speaking. Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
When we separated from England and we became independent, did England then declare war on us?
Yes.
Yes. Who won that war?
That would be us.
All right. Very good.
Unlike Australia, which is still technically a colony of England.
Listen to how smart these folks are.
Wow.
Fantastic.
And
January 24th is Australia Day, and they are technically not independent.
Are you from Australia?
No, but I live there.
Really?
Yes.
That's very good. Okay.
We didn't know that.
Yeah, now you're maybe you should be asking us questions.
I'm feeling a little more educated.